Okay, we're gathering. Greetings, everybody. My name is Zachary Grant. I'm a settler here on Turtle Island. We're gathered here today to mark December at Toronto's Homeless Memorial. This is an incredibly sad, tragic, devastating month. It is with deep sadness that I'm here today, as Zach said. We meet here on the second Tuesday of each month to grieve, to mourn, to remember, and to tell stories of those we knew, we loved, of family and friends. And so we will do that here today.
The names of people who passed away last November due to homelessness were read at a memorial service held by the Church of the Holy Trinity. Is the number of people we have lost due to homelessness during the month of November last year. This number surpassed any record previously held by the Homeless Memorial.
It's a tale of two crises. A surge in overdose cases amongst unhoused individuals, compounded with the pressure of an ongoing pandemic, gave way to the rise in deaths across shelters in Toronto. Data collected by the city in 2021 shows that 132 people died in permanent and temporary shelters across the city. Out of the statistic, drug overdoses seem to play a huge role as well.
According to city data, fatal overdoses have increased from an average of about one fatality per month in 2018 to four per month in 2020 and five per month in 2021.
In this episode of The Unhoused and the Unprepared, we look into whether or not the city shelter system is ready and capable of dealing with the surge in cases of overdoses happening across city shelters. I'm Talha Hashmani.
And I'm Katya Galati.
You're listening to CJRU 1280 AM. This episode is part two of The Unhoused and the Unprepared, a six-part series where we take a deep dive into the state of Toronto's homelessness and housing crisis. This story is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Daisy was my niece, however, she was more of a surrogate daughter. Daisy came into the world with a ton of jet black hair and like startling black hair. And she was just so sweet and docile from the get-go.
Denise Warner lost her niece Daisy to an overdose in October 2021. At the time, Denise says that her niece was suffering from an addiction and was living in the Nova Hotel at 45 The Esplanade, a temporary hotel shelter operated by Homes First Society. Could you tell us what happened the day Daisy passed away, and how did you how did you find out about this situation?
My husband had arranged for some cousins of mine to come over and have kind of a surprise little gathering. And we did that. We come home, had relaxed for a little bit, and leading up to a phone call that I got, I'd filed a missing person report. I'd reached out to various connections that I had to try and locate her. I had a lot of different phone calls of people who had sightings, etc. Nonetheless, York Regional Police showed up and gave us the information that Toronto police had sent them, and that she had overdosed at the 45 of the Esplanade, which is it's a hotel shelter. I don't know if I've ever experienced such immediate searing pain and disbelief all at once. it's a bit of a blur when I reflect upon those moments. Disbelief, absolute disbelief. I was certain they had the wrong person. I was certain that it couldn't be true. I had the immediate requirement to see her body as proof, even though obviously there was no reason for anyone to lie to me, but it was a pain unlike any other.
Denise says that Daisy was labeled as high risk during her stay. She was subjected to regular checkups by shelter staff, but the night she passed away, Denise says that her niece was not checked on until the following morning.
So what did you learn about these wellness checks that Homes First does? Like, do they do them, like, are they supposed to do them, like, let's say every 3 hours or like every 6 hours? Like, what went wrong? Why wasn't she checked up upon within that 9 hours?
I wish that I could answer that. Homes First will not provide me with their procedures. And I suspect that when they are training staff, that there would be metrics. But I can only assume that. I'm being met with bottlenecks everywhere. There's no flow of information whatsoever. And the only thing that I can discern is that they themselves are aware that their staff dropped the ball. There's no other conclusion, I don't think, that anyone else could come up with, right? Because if your staff had done what was expected, you would present those materials, right? I think that that's, you know, kind of common sense. But if your staff have not honored the obligations and you don't want to be transparent about that and you're concerned about culpability, then I think that this, the way that they're behaving, makes sense.
In a statement, Homes First Society said that they are saddened by the deaths of countless people to the devastating opioid crisis happening across the city. They said that they are committed to the safety, security, and support of all individuals who enter their programs, but mentioned that they cannot force their services on who they called autonomous individuals. According to Homes First, residents must opt into the supports available to them to meet their needs. This is a statement heard by Denise many times. However, she feels that she is not getting access to the answers about Daisy's death from the shelter system. Denise also feels that the shelter operator, Homes First, favors culpability over accountability. She fears that the protocols put in place to mitigate the risks of those who use drugs are not effective.
And so the response that I've received from Homes First is that these individuals are autonomous and they effectively have to opt in to wellness checks, which seems really ridiculous for someone who is struggling with drug addiction that you would need to opt in for wellness checks, right? It's definitely a dichotomy.
The city plans to incorporate temporary and hotel shelters until April 2022. But with the rise in fatal overdoses in these shelters, we wanted to know what measures are in place to prevent and address something like this from happening. That is to say, if these measures even exist in the first place.
Lorraine Lamb is an outreach worker at Sanctuary Toronto, who's worked hard to implement better overdose prevention protocols in shelter hotels, such as the one at 45 The Esplanade. She says that city shelters should abide by standards outlined under the Toronto Shelter Standards, which is a document that highlights various protocols that should be followed by shelters across the system.
There's a document, it's called the Toronto Shelter Standards, the TSS for short. And basically this is sort of like a document that all shelters in the city are supposed to abide by. It's a pretty long document. And it just outlines rules for, you know, all of the operations and stuff like that, from like, you know, service restrictions to barrings, to cleaning, to documentation and stuff. So that's basically the protocols that the all shelters are supposed to use. But the reality is there's kind of like a loose abidement by it. So like, you know, not all of the things are necessarily abided by. And like the question of accountability is always sort of up in the air. Like, you know, what happens if the shelter provider breaks it? What is the process of complaints for residents? All of those things are pretty gray areas that like we don't think are very in line with what the standards outline.
Lorraine says that the isolation that many shelter residents face make it difficult for them to get out of a dangerous environment like an addiction. She says that additional measures were introduced because the pandemic has made it easier for residents to fail in breaking away from their addiction and compounding the risk of an overdose.
It seems as if there's more danger in these temporary hotel shelters because of all these isolation, the structure of isolation where people are not able to check in on each other.
Yeah, I mean, how the city defines safety is also bananas, right? Like they talk about safety as if people in encampments are just like violent and like beating people up, you know what I mean? Or like they talk about safety as fires and stuff. But again, like I think if you actually strip down the data, we actually see that this safety narrative is maybe more about comfort. It's actually probably more about like the city not being comfortable seeing like all these homeless people outside because they failed, right? It's very much not to do with safety. I think if they were really concerned about people's safety, they could have implemented things while people were living outside. So if they were super worried about fire safety, they could have done preventative things to support people about that, right? But they didn't. So the whole spin and the narrative about safety to me is a disguise for them just saying that they want homeless people out of sight.
My name is Greg Cook, and I'm an outreach worker at Sanctuary.
Greg says that part of his work involves responding to calls of shelter residents not breathing or who are at risk of dying due to an overdose. His team conducts CPR and administers naloxone to individuals who are overdosing.
In 2019, in the shelter system, 48 people died, which was high, I think at the highest at that point. And I remember that being feeling like a kind of big deal, overwhelming, or definitely highest in the last 10 years or so. Last year in 2021, the city just recently released their stats. It was 132 people, so almost triple. And that's in like two, three years. So, and not all, but a huge part of that increase is overdose deaths. Like, I think there's the piece of me responding as a worker well to a situation where like I'm wanting to keep somebody alive, but then there's the kind of the ripple effects, right? Like whether people stay alive or not, their friends are impacted, right? Just the heaviness of grief and loss. It's a lot.
Yeah, that sounds pretty scary. And I'm about to ask like a really personal question, but was there ever an experience where you tried to give someone help and they didn't end up making it?
There's, I guess, two situations that I can think of. One where we were convinced that the woman had died. I didn't know her really well, but we did CPR. And I think we did it for like 15 minutes and the ambulance did it for 15 minutes when they arrived, like the paramedics. And we were like, she's dead. Like, she's not gonna make it. Like, that's a long time. But we heard, I think actually through the police, that she was alive in hospital. So I don't know, we didn't know her before that moment. That was my first encounter with her. She was young, from out of town, without housing. I don't know if she's still alive or what, how her health is right now, but that was one instance where we're like, there's no way she's gonna live through that. So that was, I think, the one that I was most involved with. And there's another situation where I was around for when I was
like just a block south of Sanctuary. And we heard about the ambulance being called and somebody in a tent who had overdosed, but they were already dead when we found them. So, I mean, I think when you're able to reverse an overdose and somebody stays alive, I think there's a sense of heaviness, but also of relief. And the sense of relief is not there when people die. I think it just stays heavy. And I think mainly at this point, it's different depending on the day, but I think it's mostly just heaviness and sadness at this point. There's moments when I still feel very angry, but this is happening. Like, these are deaths that are preventable. These are often people that are young and that I care about and have so much more to give.
Greg says that the city's shelter system could do better and acknowledges that many shelters have not followed the standards laid out for them.
Yeah, and you mentioned in the temporary hotel shelters that the standards are pretty low. And you were talking about
So I'm saying they have no standards. So the general traditional Toronto shelter, which are congregate, there is a set of shelter standards, right? Where providers, say it's Dixon Hall or Salvation Army or Homes First, right? There's kind of a mandated, you gotta have a clean bath, have your bathroom cleaned X number of times. You have to have working this, and this, right? Workers are supposed to have this level of training. That kind of thing, just like a restaurant, right? There's certain standards and there's somebody that goes around, frankly, with a restaurant. This is not the case with the shelters, even though they have standards, right? That makes sure that they're up to code, right? And if they're not, they get a warning and they get shut down, right? This does not happen. Doesn't happen in rental buildings. It's just starting. There's a new rent save program, right? So I think that's sort of there's no accountability, right? So if you have a shelter where the staff are treating residents really poorly, who's to keep, right, that organization or those staff accountable?
Aside the doors of Toronto's temporary shelter facilities, there seems to be a different picture. Temporary shelters like the Novotel Hotel and Bomb Place Hotel reside around pre-existing neighborhoods, resulting in many complaints brought by community members who claim that the shelters are making their neighborhoods unsafe.
We spoke to Sabrina about her experiences living near a temporary shelter. She agreed to speak to us on the condition that her last name remains confidential.
And I can tell you that I have been living in downtown Toronto for 20 years. And 20 years ago, I felt super safe, loving it. It was so great. And in the past, I'd say 5 years, have not feel safe walking outside my door. And it has increased. To the point that once I got assaulted 2 times, I was like, this needs to stop, and I started...
Sabrina says that she feels the city shelter system has caused more problems instead of solving the issue of homelessness. She says that more services should be provided to help at-risk shelter residents rather than have additional shelter units built across the city.
However, not only are residents experiencing a change in their community, in a city council meeting on November 23rd, 2021, Downtown Concerned Citizens Organization member Dana McKeel spoke to council members about the concerns he's received from neighborhoods regarding temporary shelters in their communities.
A 51 division senior officer has described the Novotel Hotel shelter as a localized crime and disorder hotspot, which has put a disproportionate burden upon police, fire, and emergency services. The immediate neighbors, both residential and business, have lived experience with this deluge of crime and disorder over the last 9 months. Break and enter, theft, property damage, drug trafficking, weapons possession, propane tank explosions, assaults, public intoxication, public nuisance, panhandling, needles, robberies, and garbage is among all the carnage downtown residents and businesses have had to deal with. Three of the hotels are located within 800 meters of each other. Who wants to live in an environment dotted with people walking around downtown Toronto, emblazoned with community safety on their fluorescent vests, reminiscent of war zones like San Francisco, Philadelphia, Baltimore, or Seattle?
Oh,
get real help. So there has to be real help. We're not doing really helping them. Providing a place for them to stay, and we've been doing it for years, is not the answer. So again, there should be there should be real social workers there. There should be real people really helping them, not a few, and you have to report.
Back at the Homeless Memorial Service, organizers read out the names of the people lost due to homelessness in the month of November 2021.
Family and friends. And so we will do that here today. We want to acknowledge and remember well. We also meet to say that this is not okay what's happening. To say that this is an injustice. To say that these are preventable deaths.
Thanks for spending time with us and listening to episode 2 of The Unhoused and the Unprepared, a 6-part series produced for the Local Journalism Initiative. Tune in to the next episode where we assess the effectiveness of the Toronto Winter Plan. I'm your host, Talha Hashmani.
And I'm Katya Galati.